This time of year, the gear means more. The logo has a season of grit stitched in. The hat brims go low. The jerseys blaze with postseason pride. It's postseason season. This is what players and fans wear to win. Visit MLBShop.com for your favorite team gear and today's special offer. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Saints Hour. Mike Haas, and we are joined by special guest tonight, Kai Harley, a recent promoted to Senior Vice President of Football Operations, Assistant to the General Manager. How you doing, Kai?
I'm doing good. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. I know that Football Administration has the same 24-hour rule, so we won't spend a lot of time, but I mean, we got to spend a little bit of time. I mean, the win over Carolina, new offense, you know, a new stadium, a new locker room, new turf, 47-10. That atmosphere on Monday had to have just been, you know, just a great, great feeling.
Yes, look, it was a great feeling, a great experience, and yet it's the beginning of a new year, new experience. It's good to get off to a good start, and yet it's good to get a win and know that you still have stuff to work on and stuff you can improve on. And yet we're excited about what we can do this season.
Now, I'm only going to ask this question because I talked to special teams coordinator and assistant head coach Darren Rizzi last night, and he mentioned that he was watching the Dallas-Cleveland game after he got back. And I know that for you and for him and everybody there, it was about 80 hours of work last week pre-Carolina.
Yep.
And then you win the game, and you go home to your family, and you get some downtime, and you flip on Dallas and Cleveland. Now, I get it. It's your next opponent. What did you do Sunday afternoon?
And that's exactly what I did. I'm fortunate to have my father living down here with us. So he attended the game, and I brought him back to where he's staying at, and went back home. And obviously my wife got the kids ready for school the next day. And as soon as I got settled in, I turned on the game and started seeing what we have to prepare for next week.
And that's kind of where I was going, is that, man, wives and family are their angels. They live the season just like coaches, just like administration, just like operations. And, you know, you get some downtime, but hey, football, it's football season, right? It is what it is.
Well, downtime is that elusive thing for us. And we wouldn't be able to do what we do without our loved ones who take the mantle for us and take charge of the home and do a lot of the things that we can't divert our attention to during the year. So it's a credit to them for putting up with most of us.
There is only one team right now that I can, off the top of my head, that certainly just one team that is preparing for Dallas and preparing for Francine. And I know it's a moving target and it's a very fluid situation, but it's also very challenging for a team and an administration, because you're trying to make decisions and you really don't know until maybe 24 hours, but then that window's closed. It's not a storm that came across from the Atlantic. It's one that developed in the Gulf. And so it presents its own challenges. And so I would imagine that minute by minute, hour by hour, the team is adjusting what it wants to do this week.
Look, that would be correct. And I would say that this isn't for the faint of heart, if you will. And, you know, we have a lot of experience and a lot of good people around here. It's a total team effort, you know, to be able to put us in the best position to be able to focus on Sundays and be able to win. And, you know, in years past, we've had situations where we've had to evacuate. They've had situations where we've had to shelter in place or move the practice schedule up or back. You know, but it is a constant monitoring, constant communication amongst our entire staff to make sure that we're able to do everything we need to do to, one, first and foremost, keep everybody safe and secure and make sure their families are safe and secure while simultaneously being able to do what our jobs are, because absent any sort of catastrophe, I mean, the game's going to go on. So, you know, the league's not going to give us extra time to prepare absent, you know, something catastrophic happening. So we all have to do what we can within the time constraints that we have in order to put our best foot forward on Sunday.
And really, tomorrow is the most impactful, right? Because the team would be off today. Dennis said last night the plan was to have a Zoom call with the team irrespective and kind of, you know, look at things. But really, and then everything goes as planned. By Thursday, this thing is on out and hopefully back to normal operations. So it's really just Wednesday, but I can't just say just Wednesday because Wednesday is a, you know, a very important day of work for your team. But that's really what we're talking about, right?
Well, not necessarily. I would say, yes, tomorrow is very important. And yet, as we all know and have experienced in the past, some of these storms can be unpredictable. And you don't necessarily know what the aftermath is going to be. So this minute by minute, hour by hour, you know, communication, observation of what's going on continues. And that'll continue on through the night into, you know, tomorrow, into tomorrow evening, into Thursday morning. So we have to be prepared for any and all circumstances. So, you know, hopefully the storm comes through here fairly quickly and everybody remains safe and we can get back to work on Thursday. But, you know, if there's, you know, flooding, power outages or something like that, we have to be ready to adjust our schedules to account for those things.
Can you talk a little bit about, you've been with the organization 17 years, you've been in the NFL, I think this is your 23rd season, if you just look, you know, overarching, mm-hmm. the differences of your job, you know, from an administration VP and everything that you did from an administration, it's just a word change from administration to operations, kind of your job description and how it changes for you.
I mean, look, when it comes to administration versus operations, I think, you know, from the outside world, it's more administrative is all of the paperwork. And yet when it comes to operations, there's a little bit more involved in that. It's still being aware of all the paperwork, meaning contracts, correspondence with the league, correspondence with the NFLPA, rules, regulations. But just what all does it entail to run the operations of a football club? So, you know, that can be anything from something with the training staff, the equipment room, the domes, the fields, you know, to personnel related issues. So, you know, it's really just having a finger and a pulse on everything that's going on within the football operations.
Enjoy it. Differently, I know you enjoy it, but I mean it's you know, more responsibility, closer to the operations side. I mean, something you I think when you started, I mean, mm-hmm. very first started, you were like a player personnel analyst. So
analyst,
it's not something that's foreign or new, but I just wanted, you know, enjoying that this new kind of tenure, if you will.
I mean, look, you always enjoy getting more responsibility and being able to touch other aspects of your program. And yet I'll continue to say that it's a team effort and nobody here does it alone. And I think we have a great group of individuals across the organization, all working towards the same goals of trying to win a championship and bring the Lombardi home to Louisiana. But with that, I would say the thing that's most, you know, that I get out of this job is things are different. You know, there's a new challenge every day. There's a quote unquote fire to put out every day. And that's what's exhilarating. And you're competing every day for something, you know, and you're competing to be the best at what you do in some way, shape or form every single day. And every weekend you get a chance to test how your week of prep and everything else went and what all everyone had to contribute to your team winning that Sunday. So being able to have those moments where you're studying, if you will, you know, during the week, and then you get tested on the weekend, you know, where you really get a instant measurement, instant barometer of where you're at compared to everybody who you're competing with. You know, I think that's very exhilarating.
Need to take a break. We'll come back after this. This is the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
This time of year, the gear means more. The logo has a season of grit stitched in. The hat brims go low. The jerseys blaze with postseason pride. It's postseason season. This is what players and fans wear to win. Visit MLBShop.com for your favorite team gear and today's special offer. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
We are talking with Kai Harley, Senior Vice President of Football Operations and the Assistant General Manager to Mickey Loomis. When you look back a little bit at Irvine and from July 22nd really to August 18th or 19th, depending on what time everybody got home, and the amount of time and work together, I don't know if it was like this for you guys. We talked about it with the team, but you know, you're always at work. I mean, when your feet hit the ground from the bed in your room, you were at work. And I just remember one time I saw you and Michael and Jeff Ireland standing off to the side, you know, team is on the other field, and you guys looked like Jeff had been through a battle. I hadn't shaved. And I mean, it felt like this was an enormously busy, successful. There were a lot, you know, injuries to position groups that you had to bring, offensive line, wide receivers, DB that you were bringing in. And now I don't want to say camp bodies, that's disrespectful. Not to mention some of these guys, Kevin Austin, you know, made the team, right? He made it all practice. So, but it just felt like it was a very busy training camp. And because you guys were always there, always together and always working, it must have felt like that.
I mean, look, I would say every training camp is going to be busy. And yet when you move your entire operation to another state, that entails a lot of logistics and a lot of people. And, you know, it's a credit to a lot of people on our operations staff to be able to put that together. And it's a credit to Mrs. Benson to provide us the resources to do so and provide the ideal training environment when we can't be at home. And yet it's a long period of time to be away from your family. And yet there's a reason for it. There's a rationale for it. If we didn't think it was the best thing to put us in the best opportunity, in the best position to win, then we wouldn't do it. So a lot of times it takes a certain amount of sacrifice to obtain the things that you want in life. And, you know, that's part of it. So yeah, there's long days and long nights, but it's what we all signed up for. And it's the sacrifice needed to get the job done.
Probably don't, at least in my estimation, get enough credit, and I'm talking about the entire player personnel administration, for being over the cap, which is kind of an annual thing that we're somewhat used to. I'm not sure what it would feel like not to be, you know, 75 or 100 million over. But I say that to say that you were still able in 2024 to bring in Chase Young, Willie Gay, Kalik Hudson, Will Harris, Kendall Vickers, Cedric Wilson, Equanimeous St. Brown, Kevin Austin, Lucas Patrick, Ali Udo, Kyle Herger, Shane Lemieux. That doesn't sound like a team that was 75, you know, whatever million over the cap. And I think that's an impressive list of people. You're humble, as everybody on this organization, but that was, to me, kind of overlooked, especially the quantity of people that you were able to bring in to make this football team better.
I mean, look, what I'll say is I'll echo some things that Mickey has said in the past is, you know, some of the being over the cap by X amount of dollars a year is a byproduct of being a competitive and successful team for a number of years. And when you draft well, when you get good free agents, and they cost money, and they want to be rewarded, and many of these guys have earned the right to be rewarded. So when they're trying to keep things together, then there's going to be a cost associated with that. And yet it's also a credit to our scouting staff and our coaching staff of, you know, of all the individuals that you mentioned. They're all at a variety of spots on the pay scale. Right. There's some obviously that are higher than others. And yet we found people that can contribute in a variety of different areas that all come in at a certain pay scale. And in the grand scheme of things, you need everybody at every level in order to build a championship caliber team. And you need to find those contributions where you can. And it's a credit to our coaching staff of saying, hey, we don't care how you got here. If you're good enough to help us win, then you're going to be here.
And we're going to be speaking a little later in the show with Bruce Allen, longtime NFL executive. And so we're going to talk a lot about the cap. I wanted, if you can, because as we look to the future and even look to 2025, the cap somewhere $273 million to $280, depending on what you look at. But from a dead cap situation, I think the Saints, I hate to give numbers because then, you know, but it is what it is. I think it's $16 million, something like that. But it's really Mike Thomas and Jameis Winston. I think the number three on the list of dead cap money is Josiah Ezeerum. And he's like $73,000. I mean, you know, right? That's petty cash. But kind of explain for the listening audience, kind of the dead cap, how it works, because that's something that you, it is what it is. You can maneuver signing bonuses and contracts and stuff like that, but kind of how that impacts the team, the dead cap.
Well, dead cap basically, I'll try and simplify it, is money that you've already committed or paid for players that are no longer on your roster. So in every team in the league is going to have a certain level of what we call dead cash, you know, dead cap. You know, so signing bonus proration for an illustration. If you gave a guy he had a 4-year contract and you gave him $4 million to sign, well, only $1 million of that counts in each year of that contract, right? So if that player was cut or traded after year one, you have $3 million sitting out there from the final 3 years of that contract that you've paid already, is already sitting out there, but hasn't counted against your current year's cap. So all of that's going to come forward, and that would be what would be considered dead. So whether it's a undrafted rookie free agent who you may have given, you know, $6,000 to $10,000, or whether it was a high price free agent that you gave millions of dollars, there'll be a certain amount of dead cap that sits out there. So as best you can, you want to try and minimize it as best you can. But certainly, as players, you know, come and go, you're going to have to deal with that. And as the cap grows, the percentage of the cap that takes up, you hope to be less and less as the years go by.
We'll have more with Saints executive Kai Harley after this break. You are listening to the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. We are speaking with Saints Senior Vice President of Football Operations and Assistant to the General Manager, Kai Harley. And if you kind of look at how the league has kind of moved, it feels like they did some common sense things in the past few years. Most recently, there was always this kind of the teams juggling to do, putting players on IR, having to carry them on the 53, then putting them on the IR. It was kind of a shell game. But it's like the NFL finally said, you know, common sense says, they're already doing it. And they did. And I applaud it. They said teams can take two players, put them on IR on cut day, and they have to wait 4 weeks. But it just felt like, man, that's kind of good to see that there's some, you know, they see a problem, fix the problem.
Yes, look, that was a very welcome change, because what you're referring to is there was a rule that at the final cut, you know, you might have had two players, three players who you knew you were going to put on IR. But if you put them on IR on the day of the final cut, then they were ineligible to return to you that season. So basically, you would cut somebody who you knew you wanted on the roster, and you would cut them, then wait 2 days, a day and a half, put the other players on injured reserve, and then sign that player back.
If that person had not gotten signed, so you were putting,
correct,
you were, you know, leveraging somebody maybe you really wanted on your team and just hoping that he can clear a waiver. So that's what, yes, I mean. It was like, it was unfortunate.
Yeah. You're leveraging the relationship and hoping that the relationship is good enough and the player's vision of where he's at on the roster is good enough that he's not going to sign somewhere, in the interim. In addition to trying to balance out what you just referred to a minute ago when we're talking about dead cap. So, you know, you're not necessarily doing that with somebody that's going to present dead cap issues. So that limits the pool of players that you would look at to think about doing that with. And yet I would say, like, this is a start to addressing some of those things. And there are some other aspects, you know, that we would be, you know, we'd be happy if the league changed. And yet this is a good start. So, you know, it's two players, you know, could it be three, four? You know, two's better than zero. So we'll see where it goes from here.
Incrementally. And that's kind of, we think of, okay, the season starts and everything ends, but it's not. I mean, right before the season, there was, again, it was an issue with practice squads and that kind of emergency third quarterback, and the players union vetoed it like right in late August. So there's, and which basically reverts it back to 2023. And it was, I think the thought was to allow kind of any bona fide quarterback to come up and be your emergency third. And the players union said, no, we don't think that's right. If I have it correct. But I mean, it's just the point being it's evolving as we speak. There are things changing up until the start of the season.
Yeah, I mean, look, the league tries not to make massive changes once the season starts. So, and yet they have to be responsive to when a change might be needed. That's, you know, part of what we're dealing with the kickoff rule is, hey, they were going to potentially address that. But, you know, with the rule that you're referring to was a little more nuanced than that is, we still have the ability to elevate a practice squad player to the active roster to be, you know, the third quarterback. What the rule being proposed was that you had an unlimited number of times that you can do that. Right. So we have basically three times where you can elevate a practice squad player to the active roster without signing them to a NFL player contract. The rule proposal was going to say if it was a quarterback that you can do that indefinitely, and that those three elevations didn't count, you know, or didn't apply to the third quarterback. So that's what the NFLPA objected to. So whether you have a active roster third quarterback who you designate as a third, or whether you have a practice squad player who you elevate to have a third, those rules are still the same.
Let's pause 10 seconds to let stations identify themselves here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Need to take a break. When we come back, Kai's going to stick with us, and we'll be talking with Bruce Allen, longtime football executive with Tampa, with the Raiders, with Washington. So we'll talk with Bruce Allen on the other side of the break. Stay with us here on the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back to the Saints Hour. Mike Koss along with Kai Harley, Senior Vice President of Football Operations, and longtime NFL executive Bruce Allen joining us. And Bruce joins us from somewhere with boats behind him. I can't say where, but longtime executive with Tampa, Washington, the Raiders. How are you doing, sir? Where are you coming from today?
I'm coming from Newport Beach, California.
Ah.
Home of the New Orleans Saints training camp.
Yes, just there. And I don't think I've seen the sun since we got back from there, but I have never lived in an area. We were there for 30 days. I've never been in an area where the 10-day forecast does not change, just sun. And, you know, it was amazing. And I know Kai would echo that. I can't imagine a team getting more done than what this team was able to get done in Irvine. Were you able to get out there at all?
Oh, I got to see the guys. I didn't have to go to any more training camps. I've been to enough of those in my life.
Give me a sense of how you two, Kai and Bruce, know each other. I guess, you know, through Mickey and through certainly both of you have lived the same professional life. But talk about that a little bit.
Well, look, I met Bruce my first year in the league office, working in the player personnel department. And then, you know, over the years had many encounters and got to know him a little more intimately once I came to New Orleans with his friendship with Mickey. But Bruce is one of the funniest guys I know and has stories for days and is a pleasure to be around.
Well, I got to meet Kai. Kai called me probably first week on the job because I screwed up some contract, and he said it didn't fit the league protocols. But as the gentleman he is, he walked me through what the heck I forgot to put into the contract to make it an unlikely incentive back in those days. And we've gotten to know each other over the years.
Bruce, give me your thoughts about a league that, and both of you have seen it evolve, through from a salary cap being $34 million, which is kind of a backup tight end now, right? That was it, $34 million. Right now, I mean, that's signing bonus money for one player of a quarterback, and to where the NFL is now, and we're looking at maybe next year $273-280 from a salary cap standpoint. Could you have ever imagined?
No, well, you could imagine it would explode. Football is a great sport, and the players and the coaches who perform deserve the benefits that have come from the fans loving the sport. You know, I really, back in the day, I think the Sables, and I'm glad both of them are in the Hall of Fame, I think their broadcast taught America what a great sport football is. And so I don't know if there's a ceiling to the popularity. I know technology has helped, and football has benefited from technology and the great players and coaches.
Kyle, would you have thought back in 94 when the first cap came out at $34 million that it would be 275, 20, 30 years later?
No, it's funny. This is Mickey's show. I was an agent before the cap came in and negotiated against Mickey, we'd argue over $250 in a contract back in the day. And, what it's done is every 10 years, it's doubled basically in the NFL. And I'm happy that the players and coaches and the staffs that put on these games have benefited from it. But it's an amazing growth. I mean, I don't begrudge Dak's contract, and Jerry's as smart a businessman as there is in this country, forget just football, but $60 million. And, Bobby Mitchell, back with the old Redskins, we went through it. His total pay for a Hall of Fame 12-year career was less than what we were paying practice squad players for 1 year. And that was, five, six, 7 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it really is incredible growth. I mean, even when I started, it was $70 million. Was the cap. So to see this level of growth is really encouraging and bright for our future as a league. As Bruce said, it's a credit to everybody involved with putting these games on.
And it goes back to, go ahead, Bruce, I'm sorry.
When the cap started, it was interesting because I didn't join the Raiders till 95. Is all those contracts that were signed, and remember, there's no free agency, so teams signed players to long-term contracts back then. They weren't guaranteed, obviously. When the cap came in, a lot of teams weren't ready for it. And we argued for the five-man practice squad. There's some weeks we couldn't even have a practice squad at all because we were, right at the salary cap. And when I say right at the salary cap, we had to renegotiate a contract in 95 to get $150 of room and cut our entire practice squad so we could play that week.
It's changed. That is for sure. I guess, and also really the landscape when you go with COVID in 2020, so the practice squads, increased to 16, 17 if you've got an international pathway program member, and really kind of how they're being used as opposed to this is the practice squad and they're there. Now with the standard elevations, each week it is almost, you're able to utilize those players more in a game plan, it feels like to me. I want to get both your thoughts on it, but it just, when you look at what the practice squad's elevated and also the IR rules changing, they can come back. and the ability to use these practice squad players almost as a game plan feels like it's really been beneficial for the teams.
Well, I agree with that. When Kai was out here, I was talking about it. I'm a big fan of the 16-man practice squad. You know, the NFL has benefited over the decades of not having a farm system like the other sports have. And I wasn't a fan of the NFL Europe and sending players to be coached by your own players to be coached by another coach in a different system. This allows you to develop your players and have them ready for hopefully November, December, not September and October, but it'll help develop the players.
And look, I'll echo that is, you know, we've always argued against NFL Europe and sending our players, you know, to be coached by different staff. But when you look at it, as Bruce said, we had a practice squad of five players. And then when I first started in the league, it was eight players. This CBA got to 12 with the intention of getting to 14. And it was only COVID that pushed it to 16. And it's international practice squad that pushed it to 17. But it's all more opportunities for us to develop young players, which really become the lifeline, the lifeblood of your team to move forward. And you have to find contributors in every part of your roster that you can. So when you have 16 or 17 players, what it allows you to do, you might have, because you can't mention the practice squad without mentioning the veterans on the practice squad. Right. So again, we go back 20 years. We weren't allowed to have veteran players on the practice squad. So those players were either on an active roster or they weren't employed. So it gives them an opportunity to be on a club, continue to train, continue to get ready to play, with still the opportunity to be elevated or sign an NFL player contract. So to have those players who are eminently ready to contribute, in addition to some players that may be a little bit more developmental, is very valuable to have.
And it felt like when it was, I didn't feel like it, I know it. I mean, it was about kind of a, you know, kind of leveling the playing field a little bit, equalizing, you know, pay throughout the league as opposed to Major League Baseball, where, you know, most money you can spend. But yet there, and so the thought there'd be no more dynasties, but the cap is so large now, it feels like you're able to.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.
Welcome back to the Saints Hour. Mike Koss along with Kai Harley, Senior Vice President of Football Operations, and longtime NFL executive Bruce Allen joining us. And Bruce joins us from somewhere with boats behind him. I can't say where, but longtime executive with Tampa, Washington, the Raiders. How are you doing, sir? Where are you coming from today?
I'm coming from Newport Beach, California.
Ah.
Home of the New Orleans Saints training camp.
Yes, just there. And I don't think I've seen the sun since we got back from there, but I have never lived in an area. We were there for 30 days. I've never been in an area where the 10-day forecast does not change, just sun. And, you know, it was amazing. And I know Kai would echo that. I can't imagine a team getting more done than what this team was able to get done in Irvine. Were you able to get out there at all?
Oh, I got to see the guys. I didn't have to go to any more training camps. I've been to enough of those in my life.
Give me a sense of how you two, Kai and Bruce, know each other. I guess, you know, through Mickey and through certainly both of you have lived the same professional life, but talk about that a little bit.
Well, look, I met Bruce my first year in the league office, working in the player personnel department. And then, you know, over the years had many encounters and got to know him a little more intimately once I came to New Orleans with his friendship with Mickey. But Bruce is one of the funniest guys I know and has stories for days and is a pleasure to be around.
Well, I got to meet Kai. Kai called me probably first week on the job because I screwed up some contract, and he said it didn't fit the league protocols. But as the gentleman he is, he walked me through what the heck I forgot to put into the contract to make it an unlikely incentive back in those days. And we've gotten to know each other over the years.
Bruce, give me your thoughts about a league that, and both of you have seen it evolve, through from a salary cap being $34 million, which is kind of a backup tight end now, right? That was it, $34 million. Right now, I mean, that's signing bonus money for one player of a quarterback, and to where the NFL is now, and we're looking at maybe next year 273, 280 from a salary cap standpoint. Could you have ever imagined?
No, well, you could imagine it would explode. Football is a great sport, and the players and the coaches who perform deserve the benefits that have come from the fans loving the sport. You know, I really, back in the day, I think the Sables, and I'm glad both of them are in the Hall of Fame, I think their broadcast taught America what a great sport football is. And so I don't know if there's a ceiling to the popularity. I know technology has helped, and football has benefited from technology and the great players and coaches.
Kai, would you have thought back in 94 when the first cap came out at $34 million that it would be 275, 20, 30 years later?
No, it's funny. This is Mickey's show. I was an agent before the cap came in, and negotiated against Mickey, we'd argue over $250 in a contract back in the day. And, what it's done is every 10 years, it's doubled basically in the NFL. And I'm happy that the players and coaches and the staffs that put on these games have benefited from it. But it's an amazing growth. I mean, I don't begrudge Dak's contract, and Jerry's as smart a businessman as there is in this country, forget just football, but $60 million. And, Bobby Mitchell, back with the old Redskins, we went through it. His total pay for a Hall of Fame 12-year career was less than what we were paying practice squad players for 1 year. And that was, five, six, 7 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it really is incredible growth. I mean, even when I started, it was $70 million. Was the cap. So to see this level of growth is really encouraging and bright for our future as a league. And yet, as Bruce said, it's a credit to everybody involved with putting these games on.
And it goes back to, go ahead, Bruce, I'm sorry.
When the cap started, it was interesting because I didn't join the Raiders till 95. Is all those contracts that were signed, and remember, there's no free agency, so teams signed players to long-term contracts back then. They weren't guaranteed, obviously. But when the cap came in, a lot of teams weren't ready for it. And we argued for the five-man practice squad. There's some weeks we couldn't even have a practice squad at all because we were, right at the salary cap. But when I say right at the salary cap, we had to renegotiate a contract in 95 to get $150 of room and cut our entire practice squad so we could play that week.
It's changed. That is for sure. I guess, and also really the landscape when you go with COVID in 2020, so the practice squads, increased to 16, 17 if you've got an international pathway program member, and really kind of how they're being used as opposed to this is the practice squad and they're there. Now with the standard elevations, each week it is almost, you're able to utilize those players more in a game plan, it feels like to me. I want to get both your thoughts on it, but it just, when you look at what the practice squad's elevated and also the IR rules changing, they can come back and the ability to use these practice squad players almost as a game plan feels like it's really been beneficial for the teams.
Well, I agree with that. When Kai was out here, I was talking about it. I'm a big fan of the 16-man practice squad. You know, the NFL has benefited over the decades of not having a farm system like the other sports have. And I wasn't a fan of the NFL Europe and sending players to be coached by your own players to be coached by another coach in a different system. This allows you to develop your players and have them ready for hopefully November, December, not September and October, but it'll help develop the players.
And look, I'll echo that is, you know, we've always argued against NFL Europe and sending our players, you know, to be coached by different staff. But when you look at it, as Bruce said, we had a practice squad of five players. And then when I first started in the league, it was eight players. This CBA got to 12 with the intention of getting to 14. And it was only COVID that pushed it to 16. And it's international practice squad that pushed it to 17. But it's all more opportunities for us to develop young players, which really become the lifeline, the lifeblood of your team to move forward. And the you have to find contributors in every part of your roster that you can. So when you have 16 or 17 players, what it allows you to do, you might have, because you can't mention the practice squad without mentioning the veterans on the practice squad, right? So again, we go back 20 years, we weren't allowed to have veteran players on the practice squad. So those players were either on an active roster or they weren't employed. So it gives them an opportunity to be on a club, continue to train, continue to get ready to play, with still the opportunity to be elevated or sign an NFL player contract. So to have those players who are eminently ready to contribute, in addition to some players that may be a little bit more developmental, is very valuable to have.
And it felt like when it was, I didn't feel like it, I know it. I mean, it was about kind of a, you know, kind of leveling the playing field a little bit, equalizing, you know, pay throughout the league as opposed to Major League Baseball, where, you know, most money you can spend. But yet there, and so the thought there'd be no more dynasties, but the cap is so large now, it feels like you're able to maintain the core players that you want, if you want. I guess I just wanted to get your thoughts. I mean, do you feel that's true? Can dynasties still exist? I mean, Kansas City's won back to back. So yeah, but it's or is it just a percentage? You know, you can still have dynasty, but just the cap went up, but the same players are taking the same percentage.
Well, you can have dynasties if you have, the league is really over the same period of the salary cap has changed the rules for the quarterbacks. And if you get the right quarterback, you have an opportunity in any game to win. Kai brings up a great point about the veterans. That it is so good for the quality of football that these players, instead of sitting on their couch watching TV, are able to be in a system being developed, because it doesn't matter how old you are or how much experience, there's nothing like practice to get better. And I think it's good for the game. I know it's good for the coaches. In order to develop their own players and their own schemes.
And to address your dynasty question is, look, I mean, if you think about it this way, when New England was going through their period of success, now with Kansas City, I think the operations of the league allow for one team to continuously be competitive. But the nature of our cap and the parity that exists in our sport that doesn't necessarily exist to the same level in other sports is the salary cap becomes that equalizer between big market, small market, allows some of the smaller market teams to compete. And throughout any dynastic period in the salary cap era, you still had 7 to 8 new playoff clubs every year. Right. So that's the beauty of our sport, is even if you have one team who, you know, is consistently competitive, you're still going to have new playoff teams every year, and there's still going to be markets that didn't make the playoffs the year before that are going to make the playoffs this year. So that contributes to the overall dynamic nature of our sport and what appeals to so many in our audience.
Got to take a break. We'll come back and have more with Kai Harley and Bruce Allen. This is the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. We are talking with Kai Harley, Senior Vice President of Football Operations, Assistant to the General Manager, and Bruce Allen, longtime NFL executive with Tampa, the Raiders, Washington. And I have to just peel back just a little bit because you were, I don't know, 15 to 20, somewhere in that range. And your dad, George Allen, was the coach of Washington, then the Redskins. He'd been the coach of the Rams before. But you're, I don't know, 15 to 20, 15 to 21, even in your college days when you were a punter at Richmond. That must have been an amazing time to be George Allen's kid wandering RFK Stadium, where I grew up as a kid. We can talk about the 72 Super Bowl for an hour, but we won't. That must have been an amazing time.
I had a very fortunate childhood. You know, if you liked amusement parks, it's like being born into the Disney family. And I love football. And my football really started before then when my dad was an assistant with the Bears. You know, I thought Coach George Halas was the only coach in the country. You know, I thought he was the only person you called coach, because mom and dad always said, whenever you see him, you call him coach. But they never told me that about Lombardi or anybody else. So Coach Halas was the only coach in America, and I got to be an assistant to an assistant ball boy for him in the 60s.
I'm curious to get your thoughts both on the new kickoff. We're going to probably talk about this all season. But hey, here's the deal. We're talking about it, whereas we used to go to the bathroom. So we're talking about it. So it's a win no matter what. But Kai, we'll begin with you. Just your thoughts on it. And we talked to Coach Rizzi last night, and he goes, that five-yard change that they made from the getting at the 35 to the 30 is that sweet spot.
Yeah, look, I'll echo what I'm sure your conversation with Coach Rizzi was last night, is that the long-term implications, I think it's too early to say. But based on where the kickoff has been the last 5-6 years, a change needed to be made. And it was a change in terms of a kickoff return for a touchdown, one of the more exciting plays in football. And we really were removing that element from the game. So it just became, how do we introduce this back into the game while making it a safer play? Because those high speed collisions with guys running from the 40 straight on down and ramming into somebody, wasn't the right way to go about it. So Coach Rizzi and the committee at the league, you know, came up with this dynamic kickoff rule. And I think there's going to be some feeling out here the next, this first quarter of the season. But certainly I think it adds another strategic element to the game that I think some people may have taken for granted for a number of years with the number of touchbacks we were receiving.
Bruce, your thoughts on it? You like it?
Well, I think Kai started that with, we'll wait and see. It looks concocted. I'm sure there was great thought put into it. Losing the onside kick is changing the game quite a bit from one element. The injury factor, obviously, if it tests out better on the injury factor, that'll be interesting to see.
Bruce, you talked about Dak a little bit, and is it – I need somebody outside a little bit from the outside in – the quarterback percentage and what they're getting at $60 million and $50 million. And you lock in, and then maybe you look at the Giants situation. I mean, is it becoming close to teetering on cumbersome to teams?
I think Dallas has a formula that they know is working for them. And the cap has exploded, so we have to get used to new numbers. The numbers for the wide receivers this year surprised me more than the quarterback numbers. The quarterbacks have always made more than the other players on the team, but the wide receiver jumping into that world is I think more shocking. I could see a left tackle or a pass rusher jumping into the 30s, but that was a new world for this guy.
And look, I'll say that you can when you have these conversations, I don't think you can ever really point to one specific person or one specific position necessarily. But I would say the construct of your team is changing, right? So you go back 30 years, you would say, 12 guys might take up 75% of your cap. And now we're approaching where that's five guys are approaching 75% of your cap. So beyond the question of whether or not you individually think that those five players are worth it is really irrelevant, because you still have to field 53 guys in a 16-man practice squad. So I think this is related to everything we've been talking about in terms of being able to get contributions from your practice squad, maybe that you weren't able to get 15, 20 years ago, to help balance that out in terms of the depth overall that you have on your roster. So, but certainly guys have earned the paychecks that they're getting, but the dynamics of what they're being paid is changing. Right now we're dealing with a $255 million cap. You go back 10 years and you're going to say the cap was 137, 140. So it hasn't increased 100% yet. And yet quarterbacks 10 years ago were 18, you got to make the math work. So that's what's leading to a smaller number of players taking up that higher percentage. And yet it's the beauty of our league and being able to, what's important to you or what might be less important to you is more important to somebody else. Right. So to Bruce's point, we talk about the wide receivers. You might have a number two wide receiver on your team, and yet he's going to go somewhere else and be their number one. So he'll make your team, just a little bit worse by leaving, but then he'll make that other team a little bit better by going, which again creates that parity that we've been talking about. So it's the way the economic system of the league is working to create a system that breeds parity.
And final question, Bruce, let you go, would just be what you thought about the Saints. If you've watched them certainly in camp, and real new offense and a lot of new faces. And then when you see how they had performed on Sunday against Carolina, just your overall thoughts about what this team can do this year.
Well, first of all, I don't think you could ask for a better opening game. I mean, the Saints look terrific. You have a nickelback from Tennessee who probably broke Doug Atkins' sack record from Tennessee with the Saints in one game. They look good. Coach Allen's always been a good defensive mind. Everyone respects him in the league. If Derek has the potential to play an entire season like that, I've gotten to know a lot about his football work because I'm friends with John Gruden, who's in charge of his fan club, I think, in the South.
Full-time gig.
And I've heard his virtue. So that's as good an opening as you can have. And knock on wood, I haven't got the injury report yet, Kai, but if you came out healthy, you can't ask for anything better than that.
Well, we appreciate your time, Bruce. Go to your boat. Enjoy. We'll be fighting Francine here and doing what we can. But big fan, longtime fan, and appreciate you stopping and spending some time with us today.
Thank you, gentlemen. Good luck this week.
Same with you, Kai. Best of luck today. And as you know, lots of things, moving targets with Francine. And we'll prepare for Francine in Dallas and take them one day at a time. Thank you to both of you.
All right. Appreciate it.
That is the Saints Hour. Thanks for listening, everyone. My thanks to Charlie Long in the booth and to all those listening out there. Be safe and go Saints. This is the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. We are talking with Kai Harley, Senior Vice President of Football Operations, Assistant to the General Manager, and Bruce Allen, longtime NFL executive with Tampa, the Raiders, Washington. And I have to just peel back just a little bit because you were, 15 to 20, somewhere in that range. And your dad, George Allen, was the coach of Washington, then the Redskins. He'd been the coach of the Rams before. But you're, 15 to 20, 15 to 21, even in your college days when you were a punter at Richmond. That must have been an amazing time to be George Allen's kid wandering RFK Stadium, where I grew up as a kid. We can talk about the 72 Super Bowl for an hour, but we won't. That must have been an amazing time.
I had a very fortunate childhood. You know, if you liked amusement parks, it's like being born into the Disney family. And I love football. And my football really started before then when my dad was an assistant with the Bears. You know, I thought Coach George Halas was the only coach in the country. You know, I thought he was the only person you called coach, because mom and dad always said, whenever you see him, you call him coach. But they never told me that about Lombardi or anybody else. So Coach Halas was the only coach in America, and I got to be an assistant to an assistant ball boy for him in the 60s.
I'm curious to get your thoughts both on the new kickoff. We're going to probably talk about this all season. But hey, here's the deal. We're talking about it, whereas we used to go to the bathroom. So we're talking about it. So it's a win no matter what. But Kai, we'll begin with you. Just your thoughts on it. And we talked to Coach Rizzi last night, and he goes, that five-yard change that they made from the getting at the 35 to the 30 is that sweet spot.
Yeah, look, I'll echo what I'm sure your conversation with Coach Rizzi was last night, is that the long-term implications, I think it's too early to say. But based on where the kickoff has been the last 5-6 years, a change needed to be made. And it was a change in terms of a kickoff return for a touchdown, one of the more exciting plays in football. And we really were removing that element from the game. So it just became, how do we introduce this back into the game while making it a safer play? Because those high speed collisions with guys running from the 40 straight on down and ramming into somebody, wasn't the right way to go about it. So Coach Rizzi and the committee at the league, you know, came up with this dynamic kickoff rule. And I think there's going to be some feeling out here the next, this first quarter of the season. But certainly I think it adds another strategic element to the game that I think some people may have taken for granted for a number of years with the number of touchbacks we were receiving.
Bruce, your thoughts on it? You like it?
Well, I think Kai started that with, we'll wait and see. It looks concocted. I'm sure there was great thought put into it. Losing the onside kick is changing the game quite a bit from one element. The injury factor, obviously, if it tests out better on the injury factor, that'll be interesting to see.
Bruce, you talked about Dak a little bit, and is it? I need somebody outside a little bit from the outside in. The quarterback percentage and what they're getting, at $60 million and $50 million, and you teams lock in, and then maybe you look at the Giants situation. I mean, is it becoming close to teetering on cumbersome to teams?
I think Dallas has a formula that they know is working for them, and the cap has exploded. So we have to get used to new numbers. The numbers for the wide receivers this year surprised me more than the quarterback numbers. The quarterbacks have always made more than the other players on the team, but the wide receiver jumping into that world is. I think more shocking. I could see a left tackle or a pass rusher jumping into the 30s, but that was a new world for this guy.
And look, I'll say that you can when you have these conversations, I don't think you can ever really point to one specific person or one specific position necessarily. But I would say the construct of your team is changing. Right. So you go back 30 years, you would say, 12 guys might take up 75% of your cap. And now we're approaching where that's 5 guys are approaching 75% of your cap. So beyond the question of whether or not you individually think that those 5 players are worth it is really irrelevant. because you still have to field 53 guys in a 16-man practice squad. So I think this is related to everything we've been talking about in terms of being able to get contributions from your practice squad, maybe that you weren't able to get 15, 20 years ago to help balance that out in terms of the depth overall that you have on your roster. So, but certainly guys have earned the paychecks that they're getting, but the dynamics of what they're being paid is changing. You know, right now we're dealing with a $255 million cap. You go back 10 years and you're going to say the cap was 137, 140. So it hasn't increased 100% yet. And yet quarterbacks 10 years ago were 18, you know, so like you got to make the math work. So, and that's what's leading to a smaller number of players taking up that higher percentage. And yet it's the beauty of our league and being able to, what's important to you or, you know, what might be less important to you is more important to somebody else. Right. So to Bruce's point, we talk about the wide receivers. If you might have a number two wide receiver on your team and yet he's going to go somewhere else and be their number one. So he'll make your team, you know, just a little bit worse by leaving, but then he'll make that other team a little bit better by going, which again creates that parity that we've been talking about. So it's the way the economic system of the league is working to create a system that breeds parity.
And final question, Bruce, let you go, would just be what you thought about the Saints. If you've, you know, watched them certainly in camp and real new offense and, you know, a lot of new faces. And then when you see how they had performed on Sunday against Carolina, just your overall thoughts about what this team can do this year.
Well, first of all, I don't think you could ask for a better opening game. I mean, the Saints look terrific. You have a nickelback from Tennessee who probably broke Doug Atkins' sack record from Tennessee with the Saints in one game. They look good. Coach Allen's always been a good defensive mind. Everyone respects him in the league. Derek has the potential to play an entire season like that. I've gotten to know a lot about his football work because I'm friends with John Gruden, who's in charge of his fan club, I think, in the South.
Full-time gig.
And I've heard his virtue. So that's as good opening as you can have. And knock on wood, I haven't got the injury report yet, Kai, but if you came out healthy, you can't ask for anything better than that.
Well, we appreciate your time, Bruce. Go to your boat. Enjoy. We'll be fighting Francine here and doing what we can. But big fan, longtime fan, and appreciate you stopping and spending some time with us today.
Thank you, gentlemen. Good luck this week.
Same with you, Kai. Best of luck today. And as you know, lots of things, moving targets with Francine. And we'll prepare for Francine in Dallas and take them one day at a time. Thank you to both of you.
All right. Appreciate it.
That is the Saints Hour. Thanks for listening, everyone. My thanks to Charlie Long in the booth and to all those listening out there. Be safe and go Saints. This is the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
The days are getting shorter, but the lights couldn't be brighter. This time of year, baseball is different and the whole world is watching. All of the clutch hits, the game-saving grabs, the plays at the plate, and the head-first slides under the tag. That's peak baseball. Experience all of the autumn action. It's postseason season. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.